You can go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. This is the Administration and Operations Committee meeting of the Annuity and Pension Board of the Employees Retirement System on Wednesday, June 16th. It is 9:03 a.m. Can I have a roll call, please?
Ms. King?
Aye.
Mr. Klusman?
Here.
Ms. Sawa?
Here.
And quorum.
Thank you. The first item on our agenda is the request for approval to issue an RFP for the Network Infrastructure Security Consulting Services. Gary, did you want to start it off?
Oh, sure. Just mostly to introduce Jeff. Jeff is our Chief Technology Officer, and he's written this memo to request retention of an outside consulting firm to do a real in-depth security audit, because as we all know, the security breaches are now legion, and we've been told by experts that this almost a certainty that every organization will be penetrated at some point, just a matter of when, not if. With that, on that note, Jeff, you want to go ahead and talk a little more about it?
Absolutely. So hopefully it's pretty self-explanatory in the rationale part of the memo. What we're trying to drive here is just a deeper dive in a collaborative way with a third-party expert that lives, breathes, and needs security every day as their business, just to uncover anything that might be. This is more of a collaborative. We're going to open up the under the covers and let them take some peek at some stuff for best practices against all that. And as we've said many times in this forum, the security is a very fluid thing.
Jeff, you're breaking up pretty badly. I don't know if it helps to get closer to your hotspot or what, but I couldn't get much out of that.
I'm sorry. I'll tell you, I'll try and speak slower. Maybe it'll pick it up better. Is that better?
Yes.
All right. So what I was trying to allude to is the number of security incidents are skyrocketing since the pandemic started. And this is an opportunity for us to bring in someone to collaborate with us, not in an audit sense, but more collaboratively, and let them take a peek at it for best practices, across the entire spectrum of our security posture. I think it's very important for us to do this so that we can, as much as possible, humanly possible, avoid having any type of an incident. And we talked about the Microsoft exploit we experienced earlier this spring. It is rampant out there, and we're just always vigilant is the way we're doing it. So this is that opportunity to engage that type of a third party to help us through that analysis.
Yeah. One note of comfort, since my first comments were, I'm sure, a little scary. We do back up routinely, during the day. It's every 4 hours, right, Terry?
Yeah, actually, that would be 15 minutes.
15 minutes, yeah. So if someone were to, compromise our system and try to hold us for ransom, we have the ability to, restore everything, the files every 15 minutes. So it's not like they can shut us down and we're permanently locked out of our data. A breach would never be good, but we do everything possible to avoid, having any terrible consequences because of it. Our email servers, I think, as I mentioned at the time of the Microsoft hack, are actually physically separate from the rest of our servers, the ones that host Merits, for example. Although there is some always potential of cross-contamination, but we do have physically separate servers for email, and that's one of the reasons we don't participate in the cloud, because that's more of a, it's in the ether. It's more of a communal environment.
So Jerry, let me make a comment there. You were saying about cross-contamination of servers, and that's another one of the aspects we want to, there are techniques for minimizing that cross-contamination, if you will, and that's one of the things we'll have assessed as well, to ensure that if we do have a server compromised, they can't compromise all the servers. So those are the types of things we want to start working with them about, with a collaborative company to help us to assess what our posture is with that.
Yeah. Thank you, Joe.
Sure. This is Molly. I do have a couple of questions.
Certainly.
Go ahead.
Jeff, thanks for the information. Question I had was, is this the first time we're ever doing this evaluation, or has this been done prior?
So my understanding is some of my predecessors have done this in the past, but in my estimation, this is one of the things you should do periodically, just to make, because it's such a fluid landscape. The technology changes. I mean, that's why we make changes every month, or do patches every month, is the security posture is so fluid that these hacks happen and they find new exploits.
Right.
The Microsoft exploit that we experienced in the spring, Microsoft didn't even know about it for a couple of days. So it never ends. So we have to constantly do this. And one of the things I would consider is this might be an ongoing relationship after this RFP is done. And so we'll evaluate that after the experience.
Right. So Molly, just to add to Jeff's response, we have internal operational audits, and the auditors periodically look at our security and challenge it, actually. This is a different kind of a relationship, as Jeff mentioned in his memo. It's more of a consulting relationship, and the auditors we do not let into our system entirely. They're doing a challenge from the outside. This would be a more of a collaborative relationship where we bring them in and they will explore literally the capillaries of our system, whereas the auditors are intentionally trying to come in from the outside
But are you going to be giving all the auditors the information, because they would actually need that for the risk assessment and everything that they do in order to analyze everything?
I'm not sure I know what you mean by when you say give them that information.
Like the results of this.
I would assume
you would, because otherwise that would create redundancy.
I think that's what you're saying, actually. Yes, yeah. We will share that with the auditors, and that'll be
right.
Part of when we do every year, when we do our initial engagement with the auditing people, we sit down and do a meeting to do the lay of the land, and this would be something we would say, we have this relationship. Here's our posture. Here's what we expect to happen. Here's where you guys need to focus, and then just turn them loose.
Right, because this is part of what the internal auditors would do, or this is something they would rate high risk. So to know that you're kind of mitigating that as well is something that they would need to know.
Right.
Right.
No, and I'm fully aware of that. So this engagement is going to touch some things that auditors typically wouldn't touch. Even down to the point of how we do our coding and how those types of things happen. So it's far more in depth than any auditor is ever going to get coming in from the outside.
Hello, Jerry. Mark, come in if I'm in.
Okay. Go ahead.
I do have a second question, if that's all right. And the other question, I'm just curious, because again, this is my first year on the ANO committee and just want to understand the process. What is the process of selecting the RFP process? Is it done in-house, or do we use independent evaluators to these RFP system? Just curious. For example, in the city, we use different departments, so not one interest group are sitting on an RFP panel. So that's why I'm asking.
I must have a terrible signal here, Molly, because you broke up a little bit, but I think what you asked is how the process actually happens.
The RFP selection process, who does the evaluation, and how are you selected for such evaluation? And I don't know, because I'm asking because generally this is my first RFP I think I'm working on this ANO committee.
Molly, generally when we have an RFP, what we do is we assemble a review team that includes our in-house people, and occasionally we'll bring in somebody from the city or even one of the trustees.
Okay, so both internal, external.
Yes.
Panels made up of both internal, external. Okay.
Right.
Madam Chair?
Yeah, go ahead.
Tom here.
along the lines of Molly's question, when you finalize this selection process, are you bound by like the city's rules on like low bidder, or are we going to be able to pick who you and the team think is the most competent? Because this is a much different field than buying concrete for the street or something. How far do you fall under city rules?
Tom, we're not subject to the city's purchasing rules.
Oh, good. Okay.
So, planning fiduciary, we have a different, we're a separate entity and we don't, well, although I think a lot of their practices are sound, we definitely do not have to go with a low bidder. In fact,
you actually don't have to go with a low bidder for any service type contract anyway.
Oh, okay.
As long as you have a good enough rationale for a purchasing department, you're always fine, generally.
Yeah.
And does this move along rather quickly, where like some of the issues we have with hiring and the processes, because obviously this is something we want to move on fast.
Yeah, it doesn't, we don't have to wait for DER and the City Service Commission and the Finance and Personnel Committee. This is the only thing we have to wait for is the board to agree to agree to this, and then later when to review the whatever contract is proposed. So you're right, Tom, it needs to be expeditious, and so it will be.
Thank you.
I have I can email Jeff and Jerry later, but we have someone on the city internal audit side who was doing this vulnerability stuff too.
Yeah, great. Maybe that's the person we should have on the review, on the RFP review committee.
Oh, no, I meant like the company that's doing the work on the city.
Oh,
side.
Okay.
Like
okay.
They could bid on this project too.
Yeah, well, right. Well, we post it, and of course, if there are names of firms, we send it directly to them. Thank you.
And just one thing I wanted to allude to that Jeff mentioned, you know, this is now going to be something that's necessary to be ongoing. Would we have more of a retainer kind of contract? Would that be built? I'm assuming it would be built in part of the RFP, where whoever we select will have a more of a retainer, so we don't have to go through this process for, say, you know, every year or something like that.
I think initially it's just going to be a project, and then depending on, as Jeff indicated, depending on you know, our experience with the firm and with the process, we may bring it back to the A&L to decide if we want to have an ongoing relationship.
Yeah, thanks. I have no other questions.
Any other questions, Tom?
No.
Okay. So do we have to vote to approve this then, Jerry?
Well, it's really, you're going to recommend this to the board because it's on the board agenda. So the committee would, you know, recommend usually on any item.
Okay.
For the full board. So go ahead and if we could get a motion, that would be helpful.
Okay. So can I get a motion to recommend to the board for approval?
I'll second Molly's motion.
Okay.
Thank you.
So Aisha, the way this works is, at the board meeting, you'll give the A&L committee report, and
right.
Any of the items that required action items, you would mention them, and then the board will, you know, take a motion and a vote potentially.
Okay.
And we'll work with you on the A&L report for that purpose.
I mean, it's pretty much the same thing. We recommend for approval, and then someone makes the motion to approve at board.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Next on the agenda is item 2, approval of the Administration and Operation Committee Audit Charter and the Internal Audit Charter. Is Dan taking us through that quickly? Or is that Jerry?
Well, I'll go ahead and start. And I should, for the benefit of the other committee members, you know, I discussed this yesterday, and we had a question on page 3 about the... about the internal control policy and also about the policies on ethics and the code of conduct and fraud. So I want to elaborate on my response to you. We do have fact, we just experienced it in March. We have an internal control policy. It's in the form of a letter to the external auditors, and we reviewed that with them as recently as this March. And then again, it'll get reviewed in July when we sign off. So you had mentioned that you wanted the A&O to take a look at that, which would be fine. And the July meeting would be, as you mentioned, would be exactly the perfect time, because that's when we do this, all of us do the sign off on the financial statements and the representation letter with the auditors. So that's how our internal control works. And then secondly, the A&O gets involved in the reviewing the internal controls with each and every one of the internal audits, because the internal auditors, as you know, there's a number of them that play out over a three-year cycle. And so each of these audit reports that come in from CLA will discuss internal controls in that particular subject matter area. And so the A&O will have an opportunity to address any, you know, issues, concerns, or any questions they have about how the internal controls operate for things like benefit payments or, IT or investments or any of our multiple areas. And then on the ethics, code of conduct, and fraud, we do have written policies for those things as well. And as I mentioned, usually what happens is we review them annually, and we have a staff meeting, the management does, with all the employees to review the code of conduct and any potential for fraud. And of course, employees have to sign a statement saying that they've received these code of conduct and ethics statements. And certainly, there are internal audits as well on this that are also reviewed by the A&O. At the time the audits come up. But if you want to do these, review these particular documents separately from the internal audit discussions, we can certainly do that as well. So I leave that for you to think about at your leisure, but I just wanted to mention that because we just had the briefest of conversations yesterday about it.
Right.
And we could do it all in July if you wish.
Yeah, I think that would be good. Does anyone else have any questions or comments? We were talking about that first bullet point that Jerry has up on the screen.
Right. And so for the benefit of Molly, who hasn't been on this committee before, Tom's been around for a long time. This particular audit charter is it's an annual charter that we ask the committee to consider renewing every year. And so really the only change for this year is the date, May 2021, yeah, instead of 2020. Otherwise, this is a routine housekeeping item. But if there are any questions or comments about any of the details in here, we'd be glad to address them.
I don't have any questions. I'm just curious to know that all the audits of prior years and audit recommendations are all on the website, right? Just for my education.
I'm sorry, Molly, could you repeat that? Because you were breaking up on my end again.
Yeah, I think it's my side. One of my husband and I both are on Teams right now. But it's just for my education. All audits are now posted. Both audit findings and recommendations are all on CMER's website, correct?
Except the ones that might cover IT vulnerabilities. We don't want to give hackers a roadmap on how to get into our system. In other words, if there's a security risk, we don't post them. But otherwise, it's part of our transparency. We're glad that we have it.
Okay.
A couple years ago, I got a call from the Journal Sentinel trying to compare us to the county operation, which was, to me, an invidious comparison. And I explained to him, he asked me, how do we know that things are going okay for, like, benefit calculations? And I explained to him, we have internal audits, and they're posted. So anybody can look at them, even journalists.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions or comments? I know I asked a bunch of questions last year on the internal audit charter, so I think all my questions were answered then, but if anyone else has any questions. Tom, no?
No, yep, I've asked mine a couple.
What did you say? Sorry, you broke up.
I asked my questions a couple years ago, so.
Okay.
Thanks.
And do I have a motion to approve the A&O committee charter and internal audit charter?
I'll motion.
And I'll second that motion.
Okay, thank you. With that, I think we can move on to number three, which is the IT projects portfolio. Jeff, are you taking this?
Yes, I am. All right, so the first slide in the deck is just a listing of the major projects and initiatives we have going on right now. And you'll see when we get down the next slide or two, the biggest things that have changed for us is the reporting software that has been going on for a couple of years is complete. So we're now on a supported version of our reporting software. And that was, it was hundreds and hundreds of reports that had to be converted there. The other thing that you'll notice on here is a, I think it's on here. Well, actually, it's in relation to the very last bullet point there is the Struts upgrade and modernizing the mayor's website. So we did a proof of concept for that, and which included basically showing a bunch of enhancements to the mayor's user interface that went over very well with the staff. So we have moved into actually an actual project for that to do the Struts upgrade. And the Struts component is a piece of software from Apache that actually drives all of the web processing. And it's the version we're on right now is going non-support, so that's why we're even driving any of this. But in relation to that as well, is we're going to upgrade and do some enhancements to the user interface, which are went over very well received by the staff. So we moved in out of proof of concept now actually into a project to actually execute that. And most of the rest of the things, these bullet points are backup exec was upgraded, done some routine maintenance, desktop PC upgrades. So it's all pretty normal stuff that happens periodically throughout the year. Questions on that first? And the second grouping of items is provide the application statistics we've actually did for the month of May. So PIRs, changes and things that actually were there. It's just a listing of the statistics themselves.
This is Molly. I have a quick question for you, Jeff.
Sure. Go ahead.
What is DNS review and cleanup 2020?
So DNS domain services. Domain name services is a Microsoft feature that actually helps resolve websites and addresses in the network. And so every year, we go in there and see, do those entries make sense anymore? And that's actually a vector, a security vector. People can come in and mimic a DNS entry and actually get into the network that way. So it's important we do that on an annual basis. So the domain names, we review that every year, clean up what entries that are no longer needed. Say, I'm trying to think of it. Say we take a server out of service because it's retired. That DNS entry actually has to come out of the network so that it's no longer there and it's no longer a vector. And so it's partially clean up, it's partially a security item as well.
Yep, thanks.
Mm-hmm. All right, next slide. And so this is the actual portfolio of what's going on right now. We're still in the process of upgrading our Titan management system, which actually does, it's how the CMRS website is written. We're still working on upgrading our tape backup system. Similar to DNS cleanup, we do a firewall cleanup every year. That's in the process as well. The next item is FileNet needs to be upgraded because the version we're on is not going to be supported soon. So we're doing that as well. And then the last item is the one I mentioned, where we're actually doing the upgrade of Struts and changing the upgrading the user interface in the mayor's website, in the mayor's database. And then all the stuff below is stuff we've done over the past 12 months.
Sorry, I have another question. Is that okay, Aja?
Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. The bottom portion says completed projects and tasks in the last 12 months. You have the project you've listed, the date it was completed, and you have the hours, amount of hours worked on each project and dollars spent. Are these external dollars? Are these consulting dollars or in-house per se? I say you have names, and some of them I thought is in-house, but I wasn't sure.
Where those dollars are internal dollars? There may be some external dollars in there, but the majority of it is internal resources, and we're just doing it at a blended rate so that we have an idea how we do that, of what that actually would have cost us had we had to go externally. So I'm looking
at that. Helps. So just give you a good idea how many hours per annum you spend on these upgrades.
So we have to do some pretty intricate timekeeping, and we keep track of all that. Everything's done through our time, it's not time management, it's our ticketing system. So every project has a ticket, every activity has a ticket. And then when, as people are working on it, they actually log hours against that ticket, and then we're able to put a blended rate against it and report back out that this is what it costs. And it's probably, if we're using all internal resources, it's probably actually cheaper than if we had to go externally. But it's a figure for comparison.
Mr. Cabrera, thank you. Appreciate it. Mm-hmm.
You bet.
Any other questions, or does that conclude the report, Jeff?
I believe there are only two slides, yes.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Our next agenda item then is the organizational and personnel update. Jerry?
Melody's going to join me on this as well. The Finance and Personnel Committee recently approved the vacancy request we have for these two positions. These are due to retirements. So, Melody, we're beginning to recruit for these, right? The job descriptions are done, and can you tell us what has transpired with DER recently?
Okay, the only one that's listed right now is the Record Tech 2, but we also got approval from FNP for the pension accounting specialist. At this point, the retirements will occur in the month of July, so we have not started anything. We just got approval for those positions so that when the time does come, that we can fill those positions as soon as possible. And then the network administrator position, that's the one Jeff has been working with DER on. And I'm not sure if Jeff can update us on where he is with the network administrator. But like I said, the other two, the Record Tech 2 and the pension accounting specialist, which is not listed on here because we're not currently working with them. It's just been approved by.
Of course, we do have cross training, and there is a transition. We have a plan for a transition when we'll retire in July, because I'm sure the recruitment will be ongoing for a while.
You can actually get, Melody, you can actually get the job announcement out there before the person retires. They do let you do that.
Okay. Oh, okay. Well,
so you can jumpstart the process so you can get the recruitment going. They do that a lot now, actually, which is good.
Yeah. For these two positions, we do plan on possibly filling those positions in-house. We do have, like I said, Jerry was just talking about cross-training, and we do have a couple of qualified candidates that are already within the department.
For promotion.
So we would prefer to go that route first.
Right.
So this is Jeff. I can update on the network admin. We finished the reclassification process at the end of May with DER and all the FNP and whoever we had to go in front of. And we're in the process now of working with DER to get that posted.
Yeah.
Okay. I think is that it?
Yes.
All righty. Well, I think then that concludes our meeting. Is our next meeting the end of July, Jerry?
Well, it's in July, and I'm thinking that because of the subject matter, we probably should, it'll be a special meeting, and you probably want to have it off-cycle from the board because you won't have enough time to do it a half an hour before the board meeting, because we're going to have the risk assessment coming in from CLA, and then, of course, you mentioned you wanted to talk a little bit about the internal controls policy and ethics and policy. So I'm going to recommend that we do that on a weekday. Typically, you'll be a Wednesday week before the board meeting. So that day, depending on your availability, I know that the FNP sometimes gets in the way of your other committee obligations. Let's see, what do we have here? For July, that would be...
I have a hold for the 22nd.
Yeah, the 22nd is fine. That's Thursday. There's no investment committee meeting that day, so that's fine. And you and I have a deferred comp meeting in the afternoon, so that should be okay as well.
Okay, does that work for everybody else?
Thursday, July 22nd?
Yes.
Yep, that works for me.
So far it works for me, but something comes up, I'll let you know. But so far my calendar is clear on that one.
Yeah, Molly, you would be at the deferred comp. It's an EFC meeting as well. That's in the afternoon at 2.
Yes.
They have meetings for you as well.
Yep.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you, everybody, for your help this morning. And I look forward to seeing everybody on Monday.
Okay. The meeting, do we need to make a motion to adjourn?
That's usually the case.
Can I have a motion to adjourn?
This is Molly. I'll motion to adjourn this meeting.
I'll second this.
Thank you. The meeting is adjourned at 9:35.